All right, let's get started. Good morning, everyone. This is the public meeting of the Board of Ethics and Government Accountability. We will call this meeting to order now. I am Tamika Collier, Chair of the Board. I have on the phone Shamari Wade, and with me here today, Norma Hutchinson. So we do have a quorum. Board members, if there are no changes to the agenda, I'd ask for a motion to adopt the agenda.
I move to adopt the agenda.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
All right, the agenda has been adopted. We will start by having a report from the Director of Open Government. Good morning, Ms. Hughes.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I met this morning with a visiting delegation from China. They declined to sit through our board meeting. They thought that it would be a little difficult to understand what was being said, but we had a pretty robust discussion about the Office of Open Government, the District's Freedom of Information Act, the Open Meetings Act, and the city's progress on transparency initiatives. The visit was arranged by Fort International. That's a local organization that facilitates cultural, professional, and governmental exchanges between the United States and China. On September 22nd, I was a panelist at the George Washington University Center for Excellence in Public Leadership. I joined Lieutenant General David Hunton, Jr., and Dr. Carrie Moe to discuss the importance of taking a mindful approach to leadership that encourages a more healthful and productive work environment. The event was part of the center's 20th anniversary celebration. Budget season is upon us for fiscal year 2019. The Office of the City Administrator has informed us that our mark may not exceed $2,157,721. The mark represents an increase of just over $29,000 over our current fiscal year 2018 budget, which is $2,128,170. The mark was calculated by looking at the Office of the Chief Financial Officer cost estimates of continuing BIGA's ongoing programs and services for fiscal year 2019, the removal of any one-time funding BIGA received in fiscal year 2018, which I suspect is our $43,000 allotment, and key mayoral priorities for fiscal year 2019 and overall budget constraints. Mr. Flowers and I will work with the OCFO in the coming weeks to memorialize the budget needs of our respective offices for submission through the board to the mayor's office. In the matter of the Office of Open Government v. Yates, on September 27th, Judge Campbell issued a ruling in that case. The court found that the Mayor's Advisory Commission on Caribbean Community Affairs did violate the Open Meetings Act, but stopped short of issuing fines for noncompliance. Additionally, the court took the position that failure to notice a meeting that occurred is not the same as improperly closing a meeting. The judge has asked the Office of Open Government to submit a proposed order granting in part our motion for summary judgment. Our counsel is drafting that order today, as a matter of fact. Meanwhile, we are determining next steps on whether to appeal, on whether lack of notice constitutes a closed meeting, and whether fines may be imposed for failure to comply. Since the last board meeting, the Office of Open Government has fielded 30 requests for Freedom of Information Act advice, 12 requests for Open Meetings Act advice. The office received and closed 3 Open Meetings Act complaints, 2 of which were from Mr. Syndrome, and issued an Open Meetings Act opinion to the Mayor's Office of Veterans Affairs. So what we are doing, we are treating any Open Meetings Act complaint, no matter who they're from, with the same deference, and we are including those complaints in our numbers, even if it doesn't officially constitute the alleged violation is not an actual Open Meetings Act violation. So we're just including it in our stats as a receipt of the complaint and a closeout of the complaint.
Okay. And with those stats, are all those written responses?
They are all written responses, and they're all published on our website. The Veterans Affairs opinion was issued as a result of an Open Meetings Act audit the Office of Open Government conducted last year of public body compliance with the Open Meetings Act. The Office of Open Government waited to issue this opinion so as not to jeopardize the enforcement action that we had just filed against the Mayor's Advisory Commission on Caribbean Community Affairs. Trainings. The Office of Open Government conducted 1 Open Meetings Act training for the D.C. Public Charter School Board and 3 Freedom of Information Act trainings for the Department of Consumer and Regulatory Affairs, the Criminal Justice Coordinating Council, And we also conducted a general FOIA training for all interested agency staff. That concludes my update. Good morning.
Thank you, Director Hughes. Let the record reflect, we now have Carol Schwartz. Moving on, Director Flowers, how are you?
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. The first thing I want to discuss is to update you on the status of our operations and a recap of the statistics for the last, actually, 6 weeks. I'm just looking at the chart.
Oh, thank you. You see, we opened one case, closed 9, and we have 23 that are currently open. That's because we reopened a dozen stayed cases in order to investigate those cases and try to close them out. We anticipate those cases will be resolved by the next meeting because the interviews have been conducted, and they're relatively simple cases. We have no outstanding publication or reporting obligations, and as required by the Ethics Act, we published a copy of the quarterly complaint report on our website, and it's also included in the Dropbox. We're in the process of reviewing and updating our performance measures for the previous quarter, but that's going to be the entire fiscal year as well. And that those performance measures are based, at least in part, on the information that appears on the complaint report. So during this period, we also fulfilled their FOIA request for copies of all complaints filed with the board during the 2007 calendar year. That resulted in producing more than 180 records that had to be heavily redacted, but it also was an exercise for us in reviewing the complaints that had come in and to see how we had resolved those complaints and whether there were any outstanding complaints. There are one or two questions that came up, but generally, I believe the complaints were all resolved. So attended by staff, trainings and outreach sessions, none were reported. I would note that we do have an upcoming November 1 session with the DC Bar that's going to be on lobbyists and campaign finance. Our contribution will be the lobbyist portion, and we'll be doing that with the Office of Campaign Finance. So trainings conducted by staff, 25, which is 13 more than the 12 conducted last month, but it should be noted that this measures trainings over a 6 rather than a 4-week period. The 24 trainings included 3 employee orientation and MSS trainings, 1 general boards and commissions training, 2 regular monthly ethics training session at the Mayor's Advisory Commission on Child Abuse and Neglect, 2 at OAH, 2 one fund trainings, and 1 each at the Office of Risk Management and DHCD. In addition to those, we conducted 8 local Hatch Act trainings for the EOM staff and 1 for the council. Hatch Act training has been very popular recently. Ethics Day. Ethics Day is scheduled to take place following this meeting, and we've secured the participation of a number of agencies that we reported last time, and I don't think there are any new ones. Grants Management, OIG, Campaign Finance, and the Council, as well as the DC Bar, will be here today to participate in the sessions. Well, I don't mention that I didn't mention OOG because OOG is Vega, so you're on the hook. Yeah, you all are on the hook.
He missed that the last meeting, so I expected him to include OOG.
It was in the margin, but then I said, no, that's big. I don't need to say that. So during the Ethics Day presentation, we're going to roll out 6 new short videos. And the covered topics include misuse of title position, widely attended gatherings, nepotism, Hatch Act and financial conflicts of interest, as well as outside employment. I think you'll recognize some of the people in the videos. It's sort of a low-cost production, but hopefully it'll be entertaining and informative at the same time. So I did listen early, and I heard that Ms. Hughes mention there's a foreign delegation that she just met with. So this must be the season for them to meet because we have 2 coming up, 1 on October 24th, we'll be hosting a delegation from Bhutan, and on November 1, a delegation from China. For the first one, the Office of the Board of Elections will also come to participate because they are interested in elections as well as ethics. Advisory opinions and advice. So during the last, since the last meeting, we issued approximately 96 bits of informal advice, up from 65 last month. So again, we're measuring a 6-week period rather than a 4-week period.
Still, that's significant.
Yeah, it's a lot. Formal advice, we received, well, again, this is back to the issue of we receive requests for formal advice, but we don't necessarily issue these opinions as formal advice. We received one from a council employee who does not work for the council who had requested an opinion on the application of, well, he doesn't work for a council member. And the request for, was for the application of the council's rules to that employee. And in that instance, it's really, a lot of times, it's just a question of reading the rules, and they're fairly straightforward. So there's some question as to whether or not that will actually result in a formal opinion. Probably will not. And we also received another request for a formal opinion on an agency director's participation with a... how do we say this? A nonprofit that supports the work of the agency. We've had a couple of these, and there's actually federal guidance on this that we will follow. So again, that probably would not result in a formal opinion because it's an area of law that's fairly well settled, and we have opinions on similar scenarios already on the website. Ethics legislation and the Comprehensive Code of Conduct. So the run-up to the November 2nd hearing on the CCC, we're reporting it as a mixed bag. We met with Councilmember Grosso as well as Councilmember Che's staff to discuss the bill and have a meeting scheduled with Councilmember Gray's staff. We've not yet scheduled a meeting with Councilmember Bonds, and these are the members of the committee that we're trying to focus on at this point. So we also met with the Mayor's General Counsel, but the Director of OPLA, who is invited to join us, has not. We have not yet been able to meet with her. So more positively to report, former Chairman Bob Spagnoletti and Thorne Posen, a former Chief Ethics Officer for the district, have agreed to present testimony at the hearing. And again, the hearing's on November 2nd. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Mr. Grimaldi for any further comments he may have, and he can also update you on the status of our meeting with ANC commissioners on the CCC, as well as the status of the quorum increase legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Flowers. As just reported, the the run-up has been a mixed bag. It's been disappointing, actually, in the sense that the CCC represents the first effort a wholesale amendment of our now 5-year-old law, and to gin up any real interest has been an uphill struggle. I won't go so far as to say a battle yet, but we're making efforts, and we have a few ideas to double down on those efforts between now and the hearing on November 2nd. Mr. Flowers and I met with the director of the ANCs and I think three chairs, and then the legislative director for the committee 2 weeks ago, and we started going through the legislation. It too was not particularly productive for a number of reasons, not the least of which we found out well into the meeting that while I had provided the section-by-section analysis of the legislation so they wouldn't have to read the 80-page bill, none of them had. So we sort of adjourned with the agreement that we were going to meet yesterday, but at the last, well, late Tuesday evening, they canceled. So they're on notice of the meeting, the hearing, rather. Whether they show up remains to be seen. We continue to be available to answer any questions that they may have. So that's sort of it on the CCC. The emergency and temporary versions of the quorum increase legislation passed. Rather than go with the increase of the quorum from 2 members to 3 members, as we had proposed, we thought it through with committee staff and realized that, you know, if there should come a time that the board's membership goes down to 3, which is actually it's been less than that for a while, a quorum requirement of 3 would necessitate all 3 members showing up or somehow being present for every meeting, and that might be it. So in the end, what we agreed to do and the legislation that passed was to increase the quorum from 2 members to a majority of sitting members. So that happened. The emergency version was transmitted to the mayor, I think, last week. And the temporary version will, of course, have a second reading. And then the permanent, substantively similar permanent provision will get folded into an omnibus amendment act that's going to come out of committee, I think, either late this month or next. So that's it on legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Grimaldi.
Madam Chair.
On the CCC, have we thought about doing not a letter to the editor, but an op-ed piece or something that could be in the newspaper from this board, maybe signed on by all the members of the board? There are 4 of us, and that might be helpful in moving this forward. I mean, it's been several years now, and with a lot of effort on the part of our staff, and I think our chairs, you know, in trying to move this issue forward. And I think maybe if we did a piece that appeared in the Washington Post that kind of explained what we're trying to do and how frustrating it has been to get it done, that might be helpful in getting it done, because there might be people that would agree that might help move this needle a little bit, and not just a little bit, to just move it to getting it done. I throw that out as a suggestion, because we have certainly gone to council hearings. We've certainly spoken our piece. We certainly talked to individual members, and nothing has happened. So I think we have to change our strategy a little bit and make it more of a public discussion, and therefore, and I'm not public discussion for public discussion's sake, but just to try to get this thing move forward. Otherwise, you know, I'm not getting any younger. I may be, you know, die of old age before it's taken care of. And I think it should be. It's not extreme. It makes sense. And especially in today's world, it makes a lot of sense. So I think we should argue our point, not just verbally at a hearing that some people listen to, some people don't, but in a newspaper commentary piece that may be very helpful to us.
That's an excellent idea, Ms. Schwartz. And what I can say is there are efforts underway as we speak in that direction. I am not at liberty right now to disclose what's going on, but
okay.
Yeah, it's hopefully happening.
All right, good. But I know maybe it's happening from the outside, but if it does or doesn't, it still doesn't hurt for this board to speak up, because it's very important for us to be leaders in something we're trying to offer leadership on. Thank you.
Thank you. On rulemaking, at the last meeting, the board adopted amendments to its rules to ensure that our rules were consistent with the Council Financial Disclosure Amendment Act of 2016 that requires the chairman and each member of the council to file a public financial disclosure statement semi-annually, and that would be May 15 and November 15 of each year. The 30-day comment period on those rules has not yet expired, but the council members have been notified both by email and with hard copy letters of the filing obligation, and they're expected to file in compliance with the legislation. Our vendor was not able to accommodate e-filing for this cycle, so they will be filing hard copies of their financial disclosure statements, and then we will post those to the website. One question that was raised was, since the rules would not be effective before the council members were required to file, what impact that would have. I think that will have zero impact because legislation trumps rules anyway, and the only 13 members of the council who passed the legislation requiring themselves to file, so that's not going to be an issue. And the rules will have some effect on other employees, and I think those employees will benefit from the full 30-day comment period, and they won't be required to file until May of next year. So you'll be receiving a request to adopt these rules as final probably at the December meeting, and along with any comments that we receive. So another matter pertaining to rulemaking deals with boards and commissions that are currently exempt from the public financial disclosure filing requirement that we believe should be required to file given their duties and responsibilities. I mentioned that we were looking at this to the mayor's the director of the mayor's Office of Talent and Appointments, and he asked for an opportunity to weigh in, and we'll certainly provide him with a list so that the board will have the benefit of any comments or input he might have. And I don't know when the board is going to be ready to consider this, but it will be either the November or December meeting. But I would probably December, given that I assume that you would like to receive his comments or input before we act.
Correct.
Okay. So on the budget, we haven't had a budget meeting since the new fiscal year started. And I don't think we have a date yet for the next budget meeting. That will focus on FY18 and the matters that Director Hughes mentioned. Staffing, we still have two new administrative positions to fill this month, as well as the director vacancy. The vacancy announcement for a paralegal specialist position was posted yesterday, October 18, and we'll see how that goes in terms of timing, but the notice is on the street, and hopefully we'll receive plenty of responses. Lobbyist financial disclosure matters. We're still working to get all non-compliant public financial disclosure statement filers to file their forms via our e-filing system. Since our last board meeting, one non-filer has filed her form. There are still 14 non-filers. We've not yet received voluntary payments of the $300 fine from any of the non-filers or the one late filer, so we are in the process of drafting garnishment memos to be submitted to the CFO in the fine amount of $300 for each non-filer and late filer. The late filer has submitted a fine waiver request, which the board will take up later in the agenda, that we're opposing. CFDS enforcement for the current year. We're currently reviewing CFDS reports and following up with ethics officers regarding those submissions and inquiring whether employees are still employed with the district. Confidential financial disclosure statement enforcement for last year. So last month, the board approved three NOVs, three notices of violations for employees who have continually failed to comply with their CFDS obligations. They've failed to comply for 2 years in a row. Since that time, one employee who was served with an NOV has come into compliance. Therefore, he'll be fined. He's already been fined at $300, and probably it will be $600, but he's going to be lumped in with the other current year CFDS filers who are non-filers or late filers. So therefore, we're only going to be pursuing enforcement action against two employees. We're still attempting to serve one of the non-compliant employees, Mr. Moon, with a hard copy of the NOV. His agency has agreed to facilitate that. And we anticipate he will be served by the next board meeting. Nonetheless, we'd like to set a hearing date for the action against the second employee, Mr. French, who has responded. I'm recommending that we summon both of these employees to appear at the next meeting so that we can set a hearing schedule. Hopefully, they can be resolved prior to that, but in terms of process, that would be the process to set the hearing schedule. And I don't know how we do that without at least summoning them to come in and to participate in the process. If they fail to show then we'll set up the ex parte hearing dates and proceed accordingly.
Okay. Is it sufficient? The next meeting is November the 9th, I believe?
Yes.
Is that sufficient time to give them notice to appear?
Well, So notice to appear on November the 9th. Well, one of the employees is already engaged, so I think there's no question, but that's sufficient time for the one. I would say yes.
I don't have any objection.
Okay. Number nine. Lobbyists. So we recently met with an OCTA representative regarding OCTO's updates to our lobbying e-filing system. Some of the upgrades we expect to see are changes to the lobbying registration system so that late registrants are automatically fined and fines are automatically generated. According to OCTO, the updates to the e-filing system will be ready in November, approximately 2 months prior to the January system. Predictably, we were just recently informed by OCTO that date might be December, but we're still optimistic that it'll be ready for January. The problem is that some of these folks file early,
right,
and so we have to somehow integrate filing under the old system into the new system. So there are going to be some hiccups in terms of transitioning to the new system. So second, we have a waiver request. I don't know if the board was able to read that request, but this person is requesting a waiver of the $60 fine that was imposed after he late filed his July 2017 lobbying activity report. So the first year that he registered as lobbyist, and as he explained, he registered preemptively but ultimately did not engage in lobbying. Given that he did not engage in lobbying activity or expend funds for lobbying, he was not required to register as a lobbyist or file the requisite lobbyist activity report for 2017. As such, we do not oppose his waiver request. In addition, we note that when he actually filed his report, it did reflect that he did not engage in lobbying.
I did read the information, and I have no problems granting a waiver.
I agree. Also.
Shamari?
I agree.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Before we move totally away from the confidential disclosure statement, we talked about the two individuals involved. I do think you should contact them today because then that would give them 3 weeks' notice.
Okay. We can do that.
For the November 9th.
Well, presumably contact them multiple times, but certainly we can start today. Okay.
Financial disclosure waiver.
No, we do need to do that. So Mr. Grimaldi reminds me we also have a request for a waiver from the person who late filed their financial disclosure statement.
Is that done in the public portion?
Let me see.
She's
okay. A public filer.
Okay.
Is that the one you said you're opposing?
Yes. I'm going to ask Mr. Mitchell Stewart to come up. And we do publish these, their names in the register if they fail to file or late file, so the name has been published.
Good morning, Madam Chair, board members. Asia Stewart Mitchell. So the basis for the waiver request was that this woman has just started in her position as a I can't quite remember, a surveyor, I believe. It requires her to be out in the field a lot. She claims that she didn't have regular access to her email. And so we would oppose on the basis that we contacted her three different times in August, and that even if she didn't have, you know, constant access to her email, she would have gotten one of the three notices that we sent. We also sent out a hard copy version to her residents telling her about this requirement and asking her to file. And also, the filing deadline is May 15th. We didn't begin contacting people and letting them know that they were non-compliant until August. So presumably between May and August, she had an opportunity to file without incurring a fine. So we think we gave her ample opportunity to file before we moved to the phase of imposing a fine. We notified her the first notification in August. We just asked her to file and let her know that she was noncompliant. And so between the first notification and the second one, we had hoped that she would file, and there was still that small window to not incur the fine. And she still didn't file. We had to go on to notify her three more times. After the three notifications in August, we didn't hear from her, and then we heard from her September 15th requesting the waiver. And so on that basis, we would oppose and ask that the board deny her request.
Thank you, Ms. Stewart-Mitchell. I have read the materials, and I am inclined to deny the request.
I, too, support declining the request.
And I agree.
I do have one question.
I may have missed it, though. Could you identify the respondent by name and the case number?
Absolutely. Respondent is Gloria Jones, and the case number is 1657001. I'm sorry. Madam Chair, you had a question?
Yeah, just two points of clarification. One, Ms. Jones would have, as a new employee, been required to attend initial employee training that includes
correct.
Okay.
She would have been required to attend training, and we also notified her in April of her filing requirements at least 30 days before the filing deadline with instructions on how to file, and that, you know, she had to file by a certain date.
The second question is more general about when we make waiver requests public. If a public filer makes a request to, let's say, only disclose some information, those type of requests we keep confidential, correct?
Correct.
But a waiver of a fine, anything after the fact is public.
Correct.
That's okay.
The person's name is most likely still going to be public. The information in their filing would remain confidential, but the name would be out there.
Well, when we... The last cycle, when we did our waiver request in terms of filing, all of that was done in the non-public portion of the meeting. My understanding is we did not release that information.
Right. And excuse me. I think it was because of the nature of, you know, the reasoning behind the waiver requests.
Okay.
That we kept it private, but they were public filers.
Yes.
So I guess we wouldn't take issue with the fact that they filed some sort of partial waiver, but the
nature... that would be public. The fact that they requested a waiver would be public.
Yes.
Okay.
We're required to report that to DC Register.
Okay. Thank you.
But now I understand better what you're asking, Madam Chair. You're talking about someone who's requesting a waiver of the filing requirements as opposed to being fined.
That was the example I gave, yes. I'm trying to figure out when we disclose waiver requests, and maybe it's the nature of the request, like Ms. Stewart-Mitchell said. Yeah.
I'm going to approach with the order.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So we have only two non-confidential investigations on the agenda today. One is the 1426-001 NRA G. Price, and this is just to update the board on the status of his appeal. Mr. Price has requested several extensions, just three extensions of time to file his brief, and the court has yet to rule on the last one. So there really is nothing to report other than his appeal is pending. The second one, 1031-007, In re Kaya Henderson. This was a formal complaint, and we are proposing a disposition in the matter to be discussed in the executive session today in accordance with the DC Code 2-575B4A, which permits matters to be considered in closed session to consult with an attorney to obtain legal advice and to approve settlement agreements. That is all that we have today in the public session. Madam Chair.
All right, thanks. Next, we'll hear from the public. I see a lot of people out there. I hope you're all here for Ethics Day. but to the extent you are not, Ms. Brazil.
Thank you. My name is Dorothy Brazil, and I head a good government organization called DC Bond. I don't want to take much of your time today, and I appreciate the indulgence you gave me last time to raise my concern. But my concerns remain the same, namely the Vega website. I enumerated a number of problems that existed with the Vega website, and my review indicates that none of those problems that I highlighted at last month's meeting have been addressed. And let me give you one classic example. On the Vega website, the top bar has a number of things: home, Vega, Office of Government Ethics, Office of Open Government, meetings, training, documents, news, and ethics training. When you click on any of those bars, there's nothing there. My most egregious problem exists with the fact that when you go to the section marked meetings and training, for which one would go to find the agenda for today's meeting and to look at minutes of past meetings, there's nothing there. Let me give a graphic example of why I think this is a problem. At last month's meeting, I noticed this big screen here, and I was wondering what was going on. And when I previously attended Vega meetings, I know that there had been a move in approval for the installation of recording devices. So I was able to ask the staffer before the meeting started what was on the screen, and he told me that the meeting was being recorded. I said, okay, but how does one know that the meeting is being recorded? And where would one go to find the recording of the meeting? Because minutes are not on Vega's website. And the response I got was, well, it's not there. And, you know, Ms. Schwartz knows that there's a lot of things that, because I've been around DC government a long time, shocked me. But what is the purpose of recording this for the public to know what Vega's board is doing if on your website you don't even mention that there is a recording? You don't even link to it. And then I was told by the same staffer, well, you can go on the website of the Office of Open Government, and they will provide you, I mentioned, you have to go through several steps, three as I recall, and there will be a link to the recording. I highlight that to say that if any office or agency should be open and transparent, it should be different. And the simple fact that one cannot find out information about the agenda, one cannot find out past minutes, one cannot even find out that there is recording of your meeting, I think it needs to be addressed. Now, I understand, and I don't know the details, that there was a transition from in-house staff handling your website to an outside source. I don't know if it's another DC government handling the website, but there needs to be a smooth transition. And certainly there's been enough time that there needs to be a blending and someone assume responsibility. So if nothing else in terms of the other things I enumerated at the last meeting, I would hope that if you're making an effort to record your meeting, you make an effort to let the public know that you're recording them and let the public know where they can find. My last thing that I would ask, and I ask this to the board, to Mr. Flowers, I know that you're having an extensive agenda for Ethics Day. I'd like to know, where did you advertise this event? And where did you advertise the agenda? I noticed that it's on your website, but your website simply says click here and go to a website called Eventbrite. And when you go to Eventbrite, you come up with the agenda for today. Is that the only way you got the information out? Was there no community outreach? And I marveled at a comment that was made previously about a lack of interest or support for this comprehensive revision of the underlying legislation for Vega. And I dare say that there's probably a lack of interest because no one knows about it. No one knows that there has been a problem or there are issues that need to be addressed. So, with that said, I'd like to know, where was information regarding Ethics Day published? Was there any effort made to let non-DC government employees know about it?
Well, I know information was sent to DC ethics officers. The notice is on our website. Beyond that, I don't know. The person I'm told there were flyers that were left at different DC government buildings.
Right.
Yes. Beyond that, I was not involved in the effort to do this, except again to ensure that our ethics officers knew and that they could that they would pass the word on to DC employees.
So just a point of clarification, the intended audience for Ethics Day is DC government employees. The conversation the last several meetings on the lack of attendance dealt with the symposium that happened at the in the evening. My understanding is that Ethics Day was and is generally well attended by DC government employees, which is a targeted audience. We welcome attendance from the public at large, but again, the intended audience is DC government employees, and I think they've done an excellent job of advertising to DC government employees. Regarding your point about the website, I think it is well taken. I agree with you. We've raised and have started discussions on how to make the website better. It's a matter of getting the right people involved in this project.
We have scheduled a meeting on the website for next week.
Thank you.
With who? About what?
Certainly with our staff, the persons who are going to change the website. And we have all the comments that you made. And I'm looking now. At the last meeting, I was able to find most of the things that you mentioned were not there. This meeting, I don't see those things, and I think there really is a problem for a minute not to be there. The minutes used to be on the website before the changeover.
Point of clarification.
Let me just say two things and not belabor the point. I don't doubt that, Mr. Flowers, that information is on your website, but I should not have to hunt and peck and find it. And I found the most important information under the most innocuous heading, and I don't know why it was there. For example, it is virtually impossible to find the financial disclosure information that is being filed by lobbyists, okay? But I want to belabor that point. But I will send a written, detailed analysis, my analysis of the website, and I would appreciate an opportunity to sit down and someone tell me where it is. But again, it's not supposed to be a hunt and peck thing. It should be very obvious. The second thing I would say to you, Madam Chairman.
Before you proceed, we're happy to sit down with you, go over the website point by point. I have no issue with that.
I appreciate
that. We can set up a date, time.
Madam Chairman, I would just say that I was a previous board member of the initial civic group that helped create BEGA and the Open Government Office. So I'm familiar with this whole process from the very start. I appreciate your comment that Ethics Day and the activities today are intended for DC government employees. But I'm concerned that that should not be the sole audience. Now, just as you took the show on the road to discuss this revision in the underlying legislation and you went to the ANCs, there's no reason why an effort could not, or flyers could not have been left or sent to the ANC or civic groups, or a notice put in various community newsletters and listservs. And let me give you an example, a very classic example. I am particularly going to two of the sessions you're having because I want to hear what certain representatives from that office are telling what I think are the frontline soldiers in the agency as about what that agency does and what the law is. Because I know the reality. I know the reality, okay? My concern is the DC government employee might not know the reality or the hoops or the difficulties in terms of working with an agency, whether or not it's the Office of Campaign Finance or it's the Office of the Inspector General. But as a private citizen and other private citizens, we know. So when you just have government talking to each other, I think it's an inherent danger. That's my own particular bias and what have you, and I think I have the scars and the experience to show for it. But if you're going through the effort to have an ethics day, I think that it should not be a closed meeting. I think that should have been something that you would almost want to tout and shout from the rafters because we've come a long way over the past 5 years. And it needs to be inclusive, and that's my editorial comment.
No, I appreciate the input, and you raise a good point. Perhaps the office can get together with you and some of these civic agencies and develop a presentation for the average resident versus some of these that have CLE credits that are intended for ethics officers. But that's a very good point that perhaps we should explore more. Ms. Hughes, did you have something?
I just wanted to address the lack of availability of the meeting recordings and the meeting dates. That can be easily resolved today by just simply sending over a link to our liaisons at OCTO that links to the central calendar. Where it's consistently there. The BEGA meetings, and I'm not offering this as an excuse, but just as an explanation, the BEGA meetings and the audio recordings are on the Office of Open Government Central Calendar for all boards and commissions, and we maintain specifically the BEGA meeting agendas and the meeting recordings on the front page, on the home page.
Which I think is a good thing. However, how does the average citizen even know that?
Right.
Okay? So all of this device and installation is for naught, and no one knows it exists, and no one can access it. I went looking to access it because I wanted to know what you had discussed at your May, June, July, August meeting. And I could not find it. All I know is that when I clicked on the link on the BEGA website that said minutes, there's nothing there. And then, as I said, when I came in this morning, I asked the gentleman, what are these screens for? And he said, oh, we record the meeting. I said, so, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that should be awesome.
I have some documents, Madam Chair, I'd like to pass up.
Is for the whole board, Mr. Singer, or just for the chair?
It's... Trust the chair for this for the whole meeting. morning and noon.
That's 7 minutes to 12.
So good morning, Councilwoman Schwartz. I'm sure we'll tell your
probably want to take the microphone.
Can you hear me now?
Mr. Syndrome, press that. Thank
you. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Ethics Day, when is it? This is the first I heard of it. Huh? It's today? Where? Where?
In this building, here.
Oh, at what time?
It starts at 12, so.
12 till when?
Till 6.
Oh, okay. It's the first I heard of it. And, you know, normally I get around, and but first I heard of it. Couple things here. I have passed up to you, Madam Chair, a letter addressed to you specifically, but I want you to disseminate with your board members. I just received from Mr. Flowers a very disingenuous, for lack of a better word, denial. So I put here, Mr. Flowers' quote-unquote denial is more informative for what it omits than for what it conveys. Flowers tends to inflate his status to represent the facts as he would like them to be rather than as they actually are. As you know or should know, May and Mendelson are Flowers' former clients. Flowers therefore cannot be presumed impartial or free of bias. Given Flowers' conflict of interest, outside independent counsel to now be appointed aforementioned weighty meritorious complaints, grava being government culture of corruption, alive and well. And our expedited sit-down to be advanced on your calendar to earliest practicable date to aid in the decisional process. Please phone to avoid scheduling conflict, and I have respectively my phone number, and I've indicated two items to insert a date, the name. Well, the first is a name, address, phone number for outside independent counsel, and the second is for expedited sit-down to be advanced on calendar set for. And I'd like to direct your attention to the two documents. If you'll notice, they were lost by BIGA. I mean, what gives? Lost. If you look at the two attachments, and I made specific reference, lost by BIGA, resubmitted, and so on. I was called by a young lady. We don't have it. This is a shoddy way of doing business. This is not good. This is the Board of Ethics and Government Accountability, and you're losing complaints? Come on. What gives here? Not good. So, and not one, but two were lost. And so they were resubmitted, and then I get this denial, quote-unquote, letter from Mr. Flowers, which is nonsensical. But anyway, I'm deferring to you for the right thing to be done. And I believe in an abundance of caution in the pursuit of right, reason, and fairness, we have outside independent counsel because, again, this is clearly a conflict of interest. This involves counsel, former Councilwoman LaRuby May and the current Council Chair, Philip Mendelson. And as you are aware, Mr. Flowers was general counsel for the council, hence his clients. So, I mean, he needs to recuse himself. I was here yesterday, and there's two additional documents that were dated and initialed accordingly for the Office of Open Government. All right. And I've written neatly. I mean, even a child could discern what's being said. And I'm really taken aback by Ms. Hughes. She came out. She had the audacity, the unmitigating go. We're not taking this. You got to write another complaint, another piece of paper. I say, time out. You want to be my, author or whatever, then you'll do it. But if not, it's short, sweet, to the point. The bottom line is, evidently, I'm touching a nerve here. And it clearly indicates that meetings I am not permitted to be in attendance. Public Service Commission and the D.C. Council, all right, of which open government clearly has jurisdiction. So evidently Ms. Hughes doesn't want to deal with this, but tough. That's her job. And if she can't, in the words of our nearly near and dear President Trump, you're fired, plain and simple. At one point, hero, no longer, zero. So anyway, I'm giving that to you. And again, Ms. Hughes was so unfriendly, you know, says take your documents. No, I left them. So they were constructively filed, if you will, but you have them in hand. This is not a good way to do business. This is, you're having ethics day today. You want people to come forward, and then you slam the door in our face, and then you lose papers, and then you have someone who represents these same people who are being complained about. I mean, we're going nowhere quick. That's why the council put in place the Board of Ethics and Government Accountability, to transcend and rise above this culture of corruption. But clearly, what you have before you, it shows that the board is part and parcel of it. You know, Mendelsohn said at one time, the integrity of the council is tarnished, to which I say no. It's obliterated, plain and simple. You know, when you were there, Councilwoman Schwartz, you try to do the best you can. And we do need an elephant in the room. Competition is good. As you know, in this jurisdiction, we have no election. We merely have the obstinate donkey, right, and a primary. That's the election. And I can't fathom why African Americans go back to the slave master, plantation master, the copperheads, the Democratic Party. But that discussion's for another day. Anyway, I would like to, again, bring this to your all attention to get a timely response. Hopefully this time the documents won't be lost. And again, in the pursuit of right, reason, and fairness, Madam Chairwoman, you know, we can have a dialogue, and I can be put on notice too. I happen to be a disabled veteran, served our country more than most. So on the web and all this other kind of stuff, I'm on fixed limited income. I don't have these amenities. I do things old school, in writing and the landline. And speaking about the landline, I'm to weigh in by American Disabilities ADA accommodation by phone. The problem has been in the past when I do that, and I'm thankful that you at least afford that option, opportunity. And, you know, for Ethics Day, too, you might say for the council and others, they don't do that. Now, the Board of Elections does, and it was like pulling teeth to get them to realize this is a reasonable, underlying reasonable accommodation to appear by phone. McGee, general counsel, fought a tooth and nail, not going to do it. Goodbye, have a nice day, don't come back, we'll call security. I say, time out. I know my rights, right? And please stop raping me of my rights. And I don't use the term loosely. So the Board of Elections does it, but I would dare say others do not, and the council needs to. Now, they will, on occasion, they'll have televised, you know, folks that are out of state, but they ought to have it for residents, too. Parking is horrendous there, and we are the lifeblood. You know, we the people are the sovereign body. But back to the phone situation. When you guys, you know, are on travel, it's crystal clear. But for me and anybody else, it's very hard to, you know, hear what's going on. And I've asked a number of occasions, please turn it up. I can't hear, you know, and I don't want to be a thorn on anyone's side, but I want to know what's being said. And it's very difficult. I understand it's because the system is antiquated. And if you can do all this kind of, you know, flowery technology, why not an ample phone system where I could, you know, hear and weigh in, and, you know, we can listen to music.
Thank you, Mrs. Sindrum.
Thank you.
I will take a look at these documents. Why don't you stick around, and I will come see you after this
cool.
meeting.
Cool. Yes, ma'am. Certainly. Thank you.
Any other public comments?
I just wanted to clarify for the record. I appreciate the elephant in the room, but this elephant turned into an independent 4 years ago.
Then we need an independent elephant.
All right. At this time, I will entertain a motion to go into executive session, which is a non-public section session to discuss ongoing confidential investigations pursuant to D.C. Official Code Section 2-57B to deliberate on a decision in which the Ethics Board will exercise quasi-judicial functions pursuant to D.C. Official Code Section 2-57B13 and personnel matters pursuant to the D.C. Official Code Section 2-57B10.
So moved.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
All right. We are now in executive session. Thank you.
And I'll wait out here for you, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Chair. Yes. The trainees are mostly upstairs, 11th floor. The two rooms up.
What 11th floor where?
The back room. Oh, that's correct.
All right, the time is now 12:14. We are back in the public portion of the meeting. We have one matter to report out, In re Kaya Henderson, case number 1031-007. Bega has issued into a public negotiated disposition with Ms. Henderson, resolving the NOV, and this negotiated disposition will be shortly published to the website today or tomorrow. Thank you, Director Flowers. The next meeting will be November 9th at 11 a.m. If there are no further matters before the board, we are adjourned to Ethics Day. Thank you.